Support for this KQED podcast comes from Stanford Blood Center. Stanford Blood Center is a proud supporter of KQED and encourages you to support local patients by donating blood. Learn more at bloodcenter.stanford.edu.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Thurgood Marshall, the civil rights lawyer who argued the Brown versus Board of Education case in 1954 before the U.S. Supreme Court ending public school segregation, became the first African-American justice to serve on the United States Supreme Court, and his life and his accomplishments are brought to life in a one-man play starring veteran ACT actor Stephen Anthony Jones, who now serves as the artistic director of the Lorraine Hansberry Theater, which has staged Thurgood, a play first performed on Broadway starring Lawrence Fishburne. In addition to his 20 years as an actor, director, and teacher with ACT, Stephen Anthony Jones has acted in most of the major theaters here in the Bay Area, and we welcome him to this Forum segment. Good to see you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you, and also congratulations on an extraordinary performance. Just what you put to memory, you know, knocked me out. And you were Thurgood. I mean, you were there, you were lecturing as if you were talking at Howard University, and you were the man.
Well, you know, it's a very humbling experience. The more research I did on that man, the more I was absolutely amazed at the content of his life, his commitment to the things he believed in, and just absolute willingness to put his life on the line so that basically you and I can live the life that we live today.
Well, there's a lot of timeliness to this production, too, with things that are going on in the news. In fact, he was someone who was confronted with police in Baltimore, mm-hmm. and things mm-hmm. along those lines. Mm-hmm. Brown versus the Board of Education resonates to same-sex marriage and the Supreme Court decision there. But I read where you said what impressed you most about him was his courage.
Yes. When I really began to look into what he faced every night, the part of the play where I talk about I had to sleep in a different house every night when he was in the South, and the section where he talks about almost being lynched.
This was in Tennessee, I believe.
Yes, right? Yeah. In Tennessee. All of that actually happened, and his life was on the line whenever he was in the South. We forget what a violent time that was and how dangerous just for ordinary black people it was. And he was a marked man. He was absolutely a marked man. Very quickly, people knew who he was. They knew he wasn't from there in terms of the places he would go. And he went back again and again and again, no matter what he faced.
The Tennessee case is extraordinary even in terms of, beyond, this is the mid-1930s. This is when not only could you be lynched for even defending someone who was black, but he defended 29 separate people in that case.
Yes, that was amazing. In the book Devil in the Grove, he talks about going 29 trials, all of these men charged with murder because basically the black community was attacked and they defended themselves and they all were facing murder charges, and it was an all-white jury and 29 consecutive acquittals. Just astounding. There are people who say that he was the greatest lawyer of the 20th century. And, you know, he is called the man who killed Jim Crow.
I'd never heard that, but that certainly makes sense to me. This is, this whole play is a civics lesson in many respects, a historical lesson. It's something that, you know, I would urge parents to take their children to, you know, just to learn about Thurgood Marshall and what an extraordinary figure he is. And, you know, the thing that goes through a lot of people's minds is, the successor to him was the man that George Bush Sr. called the most, I believe his words were almost, I'm getting it directly, I think, the most qualified man to serve on the Supreme Court in the United States of America, and that was Clarence Thomas.
Well, there are those who would take issue with that statement, and I am among them. There is a comment that I make as Thurgood in the play that I think the playwright intended, and that was aimed at Justice Thomas. It is interesting that you have a man of the stature of Thurgood Marshall, and he's followed by a justice who, for many years at the beginning of his term, was totally silent. And as I say in the play, Thurgood Marshall wrote opinions on 322 cases and was just an extraordinary fighter for the civil rights of everyone. Another person that is worth mentioning is his mentor, Charles Hamilton Houston, who was the architect of the legal strategy that led to Brown versus Board of Education and the removal of the segregation laws in the South. And today, he was the one who said, use the 14th Amendment. Use the 14th Amendment. And what did they do in terms of marriage equality? They based it on the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, Marshall was really probably one of the foremost experts on the 14th Amendment in our jurist history, but he was also a man of, as you say, great courage and a man who was willing to use the law to fight. I mean, that was really his anthem, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In the play, I talk about the disagreements he had with Martin Luther King about breaking the law, civil disobedience. And it is such an interesting thing. These are two great men with two kind of opposing ideas who nevertheless absolutely worked hand in hand during that time. The Thurgood Marshall raised money. The amount of bail money that had to be raised, you can imagine, was astounding because King's followers were marching into jail in huge groups. And the NAACP, of course, sent lawyers and the bail money and fought the cases, and as quickly as they could, they would get these people out of jail and they would get rearrested.
You know what else the play catches, though? His humor. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a man of wit and a man of good humor.
Yeah.
I mean, good sense of humor.
Yeah, he was very grounded in the real world. He talked about how lawyers like to take a drink. And, you know, he went to college with Langston Hughes, Cab Calloway.
Langston Hughes got him to stop partying.
Yes, right? Exactly.
And drinking.
Langston Hughes was the person who got him committed, to social justice and to that fight for equality. But also he was friends with Jelly Roll Morton, and he liked to imitate him, and he was always telling jokes. The play ends with a joke that he tells. And he had, how should I say it? He used colorful language.
I'm thinking of that line of Langston Hughes, America never was, but America.
The country will be. Yes.
We're talking, by the way, with Stephen Anthony Jones, who is artistic director of the Lorraine Hansberry Theater and is starring in Thurgood, a one-man show which runs through July 25th at the Creativity Theater in San Francisco. You guys still don't have a home, I guess, do you?
Well, you know,
a permanent home.
That approach, the theater having a permanent home, I'm not sure that we have offices and those offices are permanent. But given the size of our theater and the number of weeks a year that we would need a theater, I think it is more cost effective to rent space. Now, that's a little challenging because we don't have a lot of small theater space in the city. ACT's opening of the Strand, I think, is going to be a great boon to the entire theater community because there are two spaces in the Strand. One is 144 seats, and then the large space is approaches 300. But that's more in the ballpark of what a theater like Lorraine Hansberry or The Magic or Cutting Ball and a number of the other small theaters. In fact, the Bay Area theater community really is comprised of small to medium-sized theaters. Of course, I worked at the flagship, ACT.
You were there for 20 years?
Mm-hmm, over 20 years, yeah.
I think that's where we first met at Carrie Perloff's.
Yeah. Yes. And it's a pleasure to be back here with you. I think you interviewed me when I did Othello.
I did.
I know I sat here with you and Olympia Dukakis. And over the years, I mean, I'm a fan. I listened to you as I drove here.
Well, I'm a fan of yours, too. I thought this was an extraordinary performance that you put on. I didn't see Fishburne. I think he's a terrific actor, too. But did that go through your head at all when you were creating this role?
No, I didn't look at any of the work that Lawrence Fishburne did just so it wouldn't be in my head.
No, that was smart. Because there are some actors who feel they have to do that, you know, and it gives them energy or they feel competitive or whatever.
Yeah, no, I want to wrestle with the material fresh and attack it. And this was somewhat formidable because, as you said, I talked for about 2 hours. That's a lot of words.
And a lot of memory. There's Lorraine Hansberry actually has some San Francisco connections. She wrote Raisin in the Sun, I think. Wasn't she in San Francisco at the time? Am I just imagining that out of whole cloth?
No, I think when I took over the theater, I brought Douglas Turner Ward out because we did Day of Absence. And Douglas Turner Ward was in the original cast of A Raisin in the Sun. He played one of the guys who came in at the end to move, and he understudied. He might have understudied Sydney.
I think it was written, though, while she was living in the Bay Area.
Was she living here?
I believe
because
that's
they
correct.
Were friends.
Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong.
They were friends, and you know, they were both young. They were both radical, not just progressive, but radical politically. And I had conversations with him where he talked about the show and how the, you know, Raisin in the Sun was perceived as Mama's play. And it was written to be the son's play. That was Lorraine Hansberry's intent. And she was very bothered by the fact that audiences just gravitated towards the character of the mother.
Well, the mother was a complex character. Mm-hmm. I know the play pretty well.
Yeah, the son was also.
Yeah, and the father. I mean, yes. It's one of the things that gave that play life was the complexity of those characters. What about, I want to get our listeners involved in this conversation, but what about black theater now? You know, I remember the days, and I know you do as well, when Baraka and Leroy Jones, who changed his name to Amiri Baraka, and Ed Bullins were talking about a black theater for a black audience and so forth. And, mm-hmm. and then things changed. A lot of things have changed, became more mainstream with August Wilson, with Antasaki Shange. So now we have really a much more mainstream type of theater, don't we?
Oh, yeah. But you remember August Wilson made comments, and he and I can't remember a gentleman from Yale, there was a debate, Anna DeVere Smith.
It was Brustein, probably.
Brustein, yes.
Yeah, Robert Brustein.
Yes. And August Wilson said black actors should only be in black plays, performed at black theaters, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, the truth of that is that it would have been, or it would be very hard, it would have been very hard to make a living. If you wanted to work in the American theater, you were going to have to work broadly across the literature. Today, is much different than when I started my career. I've been in the theater for over 40 years. And there was a time when, as a black actor, you weren't going to be on stage performing Shakespeare. People just weren't going to cast you. And that's all of that has changed. All of that has fallen away. And now, when I started, no one did plays by black playwrights but black theaters, almost. And so the black theaters kind of, there were wonderful writers, and we had them all to ourselves. Now everyone recognizes a good writer when they see one, and they jump at the opportunity. So I think what I've tried to do with the Lorraine Hansberry Theater is rethink what it means to be a black theater. And I still have a constituency in terms of actors, directors, designers, stage managers. We're a small theater. We can be a gateway organization where a person can come and begin to learn how to practice the craft and begin a career, because we are an equity theater. We're a professional theater. But we are not the only theater in the Bay Area that does plays by black authors.
No, in fact, August Wilson said indeed what you just cited it that he said, but he was rather proud of the fact that his plays crossed over, that it mm-hmm. had a massive audience. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, when I went to see Thurgood, most of the audience was white.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is something that all of us who began when I began were fighting for. You know, we were fighting for broader audience, broader opportunity. We are part of the American theater, and that's as it should be. And at the same time, there are still playwrights that I have the opportunity to work with and help them begin their careers, and young artists that I have the opportunity to mentor. And that kind of thing, you know, you can't start your career, you know, or very few can start their career at ACT or at Berkeley Rep. Those are the biggest theaters in the area. They cast in L.A., they cast in New York, they cast from all over the world in some cases. But for local actors, a place like the Lorraine Hansberry Theater, and I'm not just talking about black actors, but all actors of color, white actors, local actors, I try to support local artist, because we have an outstanding theater community here in the Bay Area, and the Lorraine Hansberry Theater is proud to be a part of that.
Stephen Anthony Jones here with us in studio is the artistic director of the Lorraine Hansberry Theater and also stars in Thurgood, which runs through July 25th at the Creativity Theater in San Francisco. We invite your participation if you would like to join the program, talk about Bay Area theater, talk about acting, talk about, well, black playwriting and black plays. Talk about Thurgood Marshall. I want to talk with Anthony some more about the timeliness of this play, which I alluded to earlier. But we'd like you to join the conversation with any questions or comments, and we invite you to do so now. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your participation. So again, please feel free to join us. Again, you can do that right now, toll-free at 866-733-6786. In fact, there may be some fledgling young people who would like a career in theater, and this is a man who's had many years who can give you a good deal of his wisdom. Other ways of communicating your questions or comments, email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is simply kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. So with all the research you did, and you're becoming Thurgood Marshall, talk about the timeliness. I alluded to before, you know, what went on in Baltimore and certainly same-sex marriage decision, but there's so much more.
It was amazing. It's been over a year since I looked at this play and decided we should do it. And in that time, so many things have happened. The conversation about race in this country has become so enormous. And that was such a major part of what motivated Thurgood Marshall. He was a young man at a time when it was very difficult to be a black man in America. He talked about violence perpetrated against black men by the Baltimore police force. And that just, you know, it resonates so loudly. It's astounding. But also, I read in the research, Thurgood Marshall wrote a dissenting opinion about towards the end of his career, about a case that came before the Supreme Court in which the Los Angeles police had choked a man to death. Per the situation in New York. Yes.
Yeah.
And so much of what is going on now, I'm going to mispronounce his name, but Ta-Nehisi Coates.
No, he's going to be on our program next week, I believe.
Yes, his book is out, and he talks about the appropriation of the black body and the larger culture having access to it in a way that is unlike any other citizen's journey through life in American society. And Thurgood Marshall, he was just almost visionary. And this play, it feels like it was written a month ago. And actually, it was written, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago. It's astounding. And I'm very lucky. The Lorraine Hansberry Theater is very lucky because I would urge people. This is our last week, Thursday through Saturday this week. And it talks about so many things. It is a history lesson. Absolutely.
And as I said, a civics lesson as well. It's also a lesson in extraordinary acting. By the way, Ta-Nehisi Coates, the book is Between the World and Me. I just want to get that on the record. But also, looking at an email from a listener, you mentioned the relationship between Thurgood Marshall and Martin Luther King. And this listener writes, according to Tavis Smiley, Thurgood Marshall condemned Martin Luther King Jr. for King's public stance against the Vietnam War, even insulting him with the term boy. I don't know if Marshall ever apologized, but it was certainly not his finest moment. You know,
well, Thurgood Marshall was not afraid to say what he thought and was unapologetic in his opinions. And you have to understand part of the relationship between the two men. Thurgood was the senior. He was the elder in that relationship. He had been around and been in the fight for a long time.
So you could call King boy, even though that was
I think
white man wouldn't have called.
No, a white man wouldn't have. But I think it was an elder to a younger man.
I got you.
And it there was a judgment about King early on in the civil rights movement because he was so young when he began his career. And
But Vietnam War was later.
It was later. Right. But they had been interacting by that time for quite a while. And so and I don't think either of them in private conversation would hold back in terms of what their opinions were. In the play, I say we I had arguments with King all the time about his theory of disobeying the law. I didn't believe in that. My approach was to use the law, not to break it. And that's a direct quote from the play. And you can see how there would be an enormous amount of tension. And yet at the same time, Thurgood Marshall led the fight to continue to get protesters out of jail. He raised the bail money, you know.
There's a listener who writes, we touched on this a moment ago, and I want to get to your calls here, but this listener says, how did Thurgood Marshall, the man who argued and won perhaps the most important case ever before the court, and a former Solicitor General, feel about Bush Sr.'s nomination of Clarence Thomas, a man of little qualification, to replace him on the court? Do we know?
I have not seen any writings. I'd only be speculating.
But he was a classy enough guy that he probably wouldn't have commented.
No, I think at that particular point in his career, he was not going to interfere or throw a roadblock. He was an enormous personality. Had he spoken publicly, it would have made the beginning of Justice Thomas's career very difficult.
It's also something Supreme Court justices usually don't do. They don't wade into politics,
no.
And they don't give their political opinions, usually.
Yeah.
Scalia accepted.
Well, you know, things have gotten all jiggery-pokery.
Jiggery-pokery. There we go again. Let me go to Sacramento. Carrie, join us. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Well, first, I'm a big fan. I'm really glad about this play. And one thing that people don't know about Justice Marshall is how he increased diversity among Supreme Court law clerks. The current dean of Harvard Law School, Martha Minow, was one of his clerks. Randall Kennedy, a professor at Harvard Law School, African-American, one of his clerks. And being a clerk on his court was a pathway to being in legal academia at levels that, you know, women and people of color did not participate before. And so that's a very unspoken thing that he doesn't get enough credit for. To the extent that you see diversity in the law schools like Harvard and Yale and Stanford, he had a lot to do with that.
I'm not at all surprised. I had some sense of that. But he was such an unapologetic progressive. He never backed away. And he didn't try to sugarcoat his positions. He said what he thought, and he was so incredibly smart that I don't think he ever met an adversary that he couldn't successfully take on if there was a disagreement.
Carrie, thank you for your call. Glad to hear from you. Let me hear from another caller. Jenna, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. And I want to let Stephen know he's doing a great job as Thurgood. I saw the play and really enjoyed it, but I also really enjoyed the talkbacks. And I was hoping he would tell people more about that and who's coming up with future plays. And I think they'd enjoy it as well.
Well, we have four shows left this week. Thursday night, Jeff Adachi will be leading the talkback.
Public defender.
Yes, our public defender. Friday night, the head of the NAACP, forgive me, Dr. Amos. He's a minister.
Forgive me, because we had him on the program, and his name is eluding me, too.
Yes, but he will lead the talk back Friday night. Pamela Price, who has argued, a lawyer who has argued cases in the Supreme Court, will lead the talk back Saturday afternoon. And Saturday night, when we close, my dear friend Fania Davis, who is an attorney and runs a nonprofit organization that deals with youth and the law. She's Angela Davis's sibling. Fania will lead the talk back on Friday night for the closing show.
Let me thank you, Jenna. Glad you joined us. And another caller joining us from Martinez. Charles, welcome.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Enjoy your program all these years. But, sir, you kind of touched, you're closing on Friday or Sunday. Are you going to put on your show anywhere else?
Well, we close Saturday night, the
25th. Okay, Saturday.
Yes, and I have plans. It has been so well received, I'm going to look at other opportunities this fall.
But take it also, on the road, Stephen.
Well, you know, I'm going to really make an effort to. I have a relationship with the Alameda County Juvenile Hall. I would like to go out to Juvenile Hall. I would like to do it in the San Francisco County Jail. I am going to look at the possibilities also for Juvenile Hall in San Francisco County. Because one of the things, and maybe it's just my age showing, but when I talk to young people, and I tell them about Thurgood Marshall, almost the first thing they say, you know, I tell them I'm doing this play, is who is Thurgood Marshall?
Yeah, of course. That's unfortunate.
And so I almost feel evangelical about it.
Well, it's demoralizing to realize that they don't know who Thurgood Marshall is, but realistic. In fact, I'm looking at a tweet here from a listener who says, what plays could I bring into a high school to show students that the play is something to pursue? In other words, any drama that comes to mind that would be teaching or useful pedagogically or instructionally?
Well, Thurgood would.
In addition to Thurgood,
when I, well, gosh, I think about all of the older work, A Raisin in the Sun.
Yeah, that's an excellent, it comes immediately to mind.
Yeah, yeah, the Lorraine Hansberry play. But also the works of a lot of the works of Douglas Turner Ward. His Day of Absence was absolutely groundbreaking satire, and it was the play that launched the Negro Ensemble Company, which trained me and generations of artists, designers, directors, actors, etc.
Let me read another email or two. This is Patricia who writes, Mr. Jones, my husband and I have seen you perform many times, and we have always been deeply moved. I especially remember Blood Knot and Master Harold and the Boys. So profoundly real and touching, thought-provoking and powerful. Thank you. Another listener says, have you or would you ever do a traditionally white play, like, say, something by Oscar Wilde, or how about older musicals, like maybe even Oklahoma?
No.
That was a simple one. And the reason being?
Well, everyone else does them. Those are not plays that are underdone. Philip Gotanda, my good friend and a great playwright, he and I have worked on his play, The Wash. I'm going to try and do it next season. And we reworked it. Philip called me and said, would you do my play with black actors? And I said, well, how would that work? We sat down, we talked, we figured out how to do it. We had a workshop. It is now called The Jamaican Wash. And part of the reason, and this was Philip's idea, he said, you know, do we need to see another Asian American or African American Glass Menagerie or Death of a Salesman? Are those plays underexposed? His play, The Wash, is a brilliant work. He wrote it 25 years ago, and after its run and its initial success, it fell off the table. We did a reading this year of a play called Home by Sam Art Williams. It is a brilliant play. It won a Tony, but it fell off the table. Those are the plays that I want to redo and bring back into the public consciousness.
Well, Thurgood is running through July 25th, may have another run. Let's hope so. I think it's a play a lot of people will want to see and should see. Stephen Allen, Anthony Jones spending this segment with us is, again, the artistic director of the Lorraine Hansberry Theater. Continued success to you, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure.
For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.